Number 7. Sometimes a voice. A fierce tropical storm was raging, and for a 10-year-old, those storms could be sheer terror. On this particular occasion, the boy was so frightened that he ran into the living room looking for some kind of protection. And there stood his father looking out the window completely unperturbed. He knew how his boy felt, and he took both his hands in his. He had to lean way over so he could be heard above the noise of the storm. And he said, "Sonny, our Father in heaven has sent his angels to be with us. Everything will be all right." Many times, especially in later years, Pastor John, I shall call him that, had occasion to remember his father's words and be encouraged. Many times he knew that angels were present, and on one occasion he actually heard the voice of his guardian angel. It happened in the early 60s in a time of war. Tribes were fighting each other, and there were refugees everywhere. Pastor John was asked by a government official to supervise the distribution of emergency supplies. A ton of medicines was ready to be delivered. The cases had been loaded into a brand new Dove de Havilland, and everything was in order. But as he put his foot onto the little step that led up to the aircraft, he heard the voice of his guardian angel, heard it just as distinctly as you hear any voice. And that voice said, "No, do not fly in that airplane." He didn't understand, but he obeyed. An old flying crate that was in pitiful condition was used to deliver the medicines. But the brand new Dove de Havilland crashed on takeoff, killing everybody aboard. And Pastor John never forgot the sound of his angel's warning words. It is interesting that the words spoken by angels, both as recorded in the Bible and as heard in our own modern times, are often very insistent. "No, don't do it. Get up, hurry, go quickly, make haste." Those are the sort of words angels often use. Yes, sometimes the voice of an angel has to be insistent. Otherwise, we may hesitate. We may try to reason with it, but danger will not wait. Peter Marshall, in his youth, spent a summer working in the English village of Bamburgh, 16 miles southeast of the Scottish border. One very dark night, as he was walking back to Bamburgh from a nearby village, he decided to take a shortcut. He knew that there was a deep, deserted limestone quarry in the area, but he thought he could avoid the danger spot, so he struck out across the moors. The night was starless and inky black, and the sound of the wind seemed to give it an eerie quality. Suddenly he heard someone call, "Peter?" The voice was urgent. He stopped. "Yes, who is it? What do you want?" For a second he listened, but there was only the sound of the wind. Thinking he must have been mistaken, he walked on a few paces. Then he heard it again, even more urgent. "Peter!" This time he stopped dead still and tried to peer into the impenetrable blackness, and suddenly he stumbled, falling to his knees. He put out his hand to catch himself, but there was nothing there. Cautiously, he felt around in a semicircle and found that he was on the very brink of the abandoned stone quarry. Just one more step would have sent him plummeting to his death. Peter Marshall never forgot that voice. and there was never any doubt in his mind about the source of it. He felt that God's intervention must mean that God had a special purpose for his life. Pastor Lloyd Wyman's father, while stationed in Burma, also heard an insistent voice. Messengers came to his home one evening asking that he come with them to a village, about 2 hours away, where there was a great deal of sickness. He hesitated to make the trip at night because he had only a little oil in his lantern. Also, a man-eating tiger had been reported in the area, so he decided to wait until morning. It would be necessary for him to get back the next evening, but the messengers promised to make the return trip with him. He found a great deal of malaria in the village, and he did all he could for the people during the day. Toward evening, with the messengers, he started the trip home. They had only gone a little way when a voice said to him, "Light the lantern." He turned to the others and asked, "Did you hear that?" "No." Again the voice said, "Light the lantern." And again he asked, "Did you hear a voice?" No, they had heard no one. He was reluctant to light the lantern before it was totally necessary because he had so little oil. But twice he had heard the voice distinctly, "Light the lantern." So now he stopped to light it. And the moment he struck the match, he understood. For there, 15 feet ahead, right on the bend of the path, sat a tiger. The tiger, as soon as it saw the light, ran off into the jungle. But then it turned, came back, and followed them all the way home. And the oil did not run out. It is not alone for our protection that angels speak. Sometimes it is to counsel us or to encourage us in a course of action. Jack Circle's father, known to his friends as CF, was a very active and dedicated layman. He was employed for a time by a portrait studio as a sales representative. And whenever possible, in the homes of prospects, he would take the opportunity to witness for his Lord, sometimes leaving a piece of literature or enrolling them in a Bible course. One day a lady phoned the office and complained about what he was doing, and his employer told him that he must stop. CF was troubled about this development and didn't know just what he should do. Not long after that, he was given the name of a person interested in photographs and called at the address. On this particular morning, he was very discouraged about not being able to do his witnessing. As he walked in from the street, he saw a woman at the window waving frantically, apparently at him. She was acting so strangely that he wondered if he should forget about going in. Then she threw the door open and said, "I don't know who you are or what you're doing, but a voice just spoke to me and said to tell you, don't stop what you're doing." Is it possible that you and I, without being aware of it, have heard the voice of an angel? The Lord's special messenger wrote, "Christ and his angels come to us in the form of human beings. And as we converse with them, light and grace and joy fill our hearts. Our spiritual energies are quickened, and we are strengthened to do the will of God. Though we know it not, we are conversing with an angel in human guise." This statement intrigues me. Does it mean that angel voices speak through human beings we know, with whom we are acquainted? Or do angels, when they assume human guise, always appear as strangers to us? Hardly had I written this question down when I discovered from the same inspired pen what may be the answer. The Lord would have us understand that these mighty ones who visit our world have borne an active part in the work which we have called our own. These heavenly beings are ministering angels, and they frequently disguise themselves in the form of human beings and as strangers converse with those who are engaged in the work of God. In lonely places, they have been the companions of the traveler in peril. In tempest-tossed ships, they have spoken words to allay fear and inspire hope in the hour of danger. Many under different circumstances have listened to the voices of the inhabitants of other worlds. Time and again, they have been the leaders of armies. They have been sent forth to cleanse away pestilence. They have eaten at the humble board of families, and often have they appeared as weary travelers in need of shelter for the night. And then there is this thrilling statement, though the rulers of this world know it not, yet often in their councils angels have been spokesmen. Human eyes have looked upon them, human ears have listened to their appeals. Human lips have opposed their suggestions and ridiculed their counsels. Human hands have met them with insult and abuse. In the council hall and the court of justice, these heavenly messengers have shown an intimate acquaintance with human history. They have proved themselves better able to plead the cause of the oppressed than were their ablest and most eloquent defenders. They have defeated purposes and arrested evils that would have greatly retarded the work of God and would have caused great suffering to his people. Again, these words have fascinated me for years. Do they mean that angels present in these assemblies have spoken through honest and receptive members of these assemblies, or have angels disguised as human beings come into these assemblies as strangers and been allowed to speak? Would a stranger be allowed to address the United States Senate, for instance, or the United Nations? Or would an angel have to speak through a recognized member? The experience related to me by Pastor Alger Johns offers what may be a clue and certainly a thrilling example. Pastor Johns, for many years a strong defender of religious liberty, was present in a Salt Lake City committee room as hearings concerning proposed Sunday legislation were in progress. The attorney who presented the case in favor of the legislation was well prepared and so powerful a speaker that our own men were dejected. It was not that we did not have strong and unassailable reasons for opposing Sunday legislation, but the witnesses scheduled to speak for us that day were weak and would certainly not be able to counteract the impression made by this dynamic speaker for the other side. Just at that moment, a stranger walked into the courtroom and asked permission to speak. He was a large man, well-dressed. He proceeded to present just the arguments needed to answer those of the speaker who had preceded him, and he did it with such power that the attorney, who had made such a strong impression only moments before, was confounded and simply could not continue. The stranger turned and left the courtroom, and the proposed legislation was defeated. An effort was made to find the stranger, but he had disappeared. Who was he? Pastor Johns emphasizes that one of our own members could have been prepared by the Holy Spirit and guided into the courtroom at just the right moment. On the other hand, Could it be that those present that day in the courtroom had witnessed a dramatic example of what the Lord's servant was talking about? I prefer to think it was the latter.